So when Jesus and his disciples gather for Passover, Jesus knows what's coming. He knows that Judas is planning to betray him. He knows that this will be the last meal with his disciples, with his friends. He knows this is his last chance to get his message across, his last chance to galvanize the disciples together into a supportive community that will be able to weather the coming storm. Jesus realized that with his pending arrest and probable execution, things were going to get tough for his followers. If they were to continue the ministry they started with him, a ministry to help the poor, the marginalized, the oppressed, then they would have to live under the threat of persecution themselves. They would likely be scared and angry, even confused, not knowing what to do. They might feel powerless, as if they won't be able to make a difference in the world. They might start fighting amongst themselves. Division could destroy them and their ministry. Now, I don't know about you, but what I just described is what I feel much of the time these days. I hear the lies and misinformation from people in power, people willing to start unprovoked and illegal wars in the hopes of distracting us from their corruption. I see the government sanctioned violence against marginalized people, immigrants, transgender people. And I get frightened and I get angry. And I'm unsure of what I should do in a world gone mad for power and money. Unsure if anything I do will actually make a difference. Worried that the divisions in our society will destroy us. And so if we've ever wondered what Jesus would tell us about our current situation, what advice Jesus would give us right now, today, in the face of what's going on in the world, I think we can turn to what Jesus teaches his disciples during this, their last meal together. This final discourse takes up five of the Gospel of John's 21 chapters. That's about a quarter of the gospel. So clearly, John thought what Jesus was teaching was something of extreme importance for the survival of his followers after he was gone. But Jesus doesn't begin with words. He begins with an action. During the middle of their supper, Jesus gets up, wraps a towel around his waist, and begins to wash the feet of his disciples. That strikes me as kind of odd. Now, from what I understand, it was the practice of the times for a host to provide water for their guests to wash the dust and dirt from their feet. But that would be done when the guests entered the home, not in the middle of dinner. And perhaps a servant might help with the washing of the feet, but not the host themselves. It's no wonder that Peter objected to what Jesus was doing. It made him uncomfortable. It put Jesus, the respected teacher, in the role of a humble and vulnerable servant. But Jesus explains that this is the very intent of his action. If he, the teacher, could serve them, his students, then they should have no qualms or hesitation to serve each other. He puts into action what he explicitly commands later, not once, but twice. Love one another. And he demonstrates through washing their feet that love begins with humble service. Love isn't just words or emotions, although those are important. Love is first and foremost an act of service, an act of compassion, an act of equitable justice. And once we understand this, Jesus says, we'll be blessed if we put it into practice. He gives us an example of love in action and then asks us to love each other. Now, the Greek word that's translated in our scripture as example can also and perhaps be better translated as pattern. Jesus gives us a pattern to follow. It's not just a one-time thing, but something he's asking us to do over and over so it becomes a habit, a way of life. He sets for us a pattern of loving service, of humility, of bearing each other's burdens. And this kind of love is an act of love. It means to share our good times together, to rejoice with each other when life is going well. And it also means to support each other in difficult times. It means being servants to one another. Establishing these patterns of love in our lives requires humility, vulnerability, intimacy. It goes against the grain of our American cowboy culture of brave independence. It's instead grounded in deep, loving relationship with God and with each other. It requires humility because we can't serve one another if we put ourselves above each other. There is no hierarchy of love in God's eyes. All life is valuable and just as worthy as any other life. No one is greater than another. No one deserves a fulfilling life more than anyone else. No one is more worthy of love than any other person. Now, you've probably heard the story about the seminar leader who holds up a $20 bill. I think I've used this story in the past years at least once. And when he holds up the bill, he asks, "Who in the crowd would like to have this bill?" And of course, everyone raises their hand. "I want it." But then he crumples the bill up and he asks, "Well, who wants it now?" Everyone raises their hand. They still want it. And then he drops it on the floor and steps on it and grinds it into the floor with his shoe. And when he asks again who still wanted it, everyone still raised their hand. The $20 bill didn't lose its value because it went through some rough times. It was still a government-issued bill worth $20. And how much more true that is of each of us. It doesn't matter what we go through in life, how bad things get. Each one of us is still a God-issued, priceless life. Now, when Jesus washes the feet of his disciples, he doesn't skip Judas. He knew Judas was going to betray him that very night, but he washes Judas's feet too. When we recognize and revere the value of life, our own as well as that of every other creature on earth, including our enemies and those who would betray us, then we are able to truly build meaningful relationships. We are not only able to help, support, and serve one another, but we want to, and we will need to. When we revere life, power, and wealth, turn from things to hoard out of selfishness to things to be shared out of love. Developing patterns of love in our lives also requires vulnerability. Seeking justice for the marginalized of this world can be risky, as Jesus knew. Those in power saw Jesus as a threat to their control over the people, and therefore a threat to their wealth, and they killed him for it. And it's no different today as those in power attack the principles of social justice, the principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion, principles that help the marginalized. They see true justice as a threat. And beyond physical vulnerability, we must also be emotionally vulnerable, willing to be criticized and even rejected, willing to look foolish in the eyes of others. I think that might be why Peter was initially upset with Jesus. I wonder if he thought Jesus was humiliating himself, lowering himself beneath his station when he got on his knees to wash feet. But Jesus didn't care. Demonstrating his love was more important. Vulnerability also means feeling empathy for others and what they're going through, to have compassion, to suffer with. Jesus washing feet is an act of solidarity, bringing the community of disciples together, no one above the other, so that they could help and support each other. And finally, vulnerability means not only living in service to others, but allowing others to help us when we are in need. Jesus insists that Peter must let him wash his feet, that Peter allow himself to be vulnerable, just as Jesus was making himself vulnerable. Developing patterns of love in our communities requires we open up to each other, that we share our lives, our joys, and our burdens, that we let others in. Humility and vulnerability are the orientation of the heart that clears the way for patterns of love to form. But we still have to put those patterns into action, to make them habits, to make them the very fabric of our lives. And experts tell us how we can better develop habits in our lives. One suggestion is to do what we already like to do. If we're asking ourselves, how is God calling us to be of service to others? We might first ask ourselves, what skills and passions has God given me? And if we don't like, say, working in the yard, then maybe it's a bad idea to volunteer with the neighborhood garden. On the other hand, that might be just the thing that you love to do. Second, set the bar low. If we claim solving world hunger as our goal, and that's a very important and noble goal, but we're likely to be overwhelmed with the immensity of that kind of goal. What if we started with helping our shut-in neighbor get their weekly groceries? That's something that we can accomplish. Third, feel good about helping others. If we try to help out others out of some sense of shame or guilt because our pastor told us to, then it isn't going to work. I wish I could just say something and people would do it, but it doesn't work. Help others because it's the right thing to do, because we value their lives and helping them makes us feel good. Fourth, we can ease into new habits by attaching them to old habits. For example, if we're already in the habit of taking a walk in the evening, maybe we start carrying a small trash bag and picking up garbage as we go along. And finally, we don't have to change on our own. We can volunteer with a group of others or form a support group. That creates accountability and a support structure as we work to develop patterns of love in our lives. It creates the strong, supportive community that is the very goal of opening ourselves to help each other in humility and vulnerability. And it's these deep communal connections that Jesus was trying to reinforce when he washed his disciples' feet, that they might come together in one loving body that sustains and lifts them up when things get tough. Now, foot washing is a ritual that we often do on Maundy Thursday during Holy Week. But the ritual itself is not as important as what it reveals. And it reveals the inherent power of love, the power of serving others, that their lives might be made better. And there's also a certain intimacy and that kind of deep communal connection. I'm not sure exactly about how it was in Jesus' day, but in our culture, I think there's a certain intimacy in washing someone else's feet. It traverses what is normally a boundary for many people. And we put up so many walls between us for protection. Sometimes those walls are good and ethical and very necessary. But other times, the walls we put up are simply out of fear and do nothing but divide and isolate us. True community, where we share joys and burdens, sustaining and supportive community, means opening our hearts and lives to each other, sharing ourselves, letting ourselves draw closer to each other and to God. It means creating patterns of love in our lives with humility and vulnerability. And it will heal our hearts, and it will heal the world. We are all bound together in our common experience of humanity, but it's in God's love that we're truly one body. It is in the divine love that resides within each of us that we are connected, that we know that we are loved, that we are worthy of love. May the patterns of love in your life be a blessing to you this day and always. Amen.